from 11-51-16-L, Virginia Department of Mental Health Services, versus United States Department of Health Services, et al. Ms. Brown, the appellate, Ms. Harrison, the appellate.
Ms. Brown?
Good morning, Caroline Brown, representing the Medicaid agencies of the Commonwealth of Virginia and the state of Kansas. Shortly after we filed our brief in this case, I read a report put out by the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality, which is one of the agencies within the Department of Health and Human Services who are the defendant in this case. And the report stated that among the five most commonly treated medical conditions for children are acute bronchitis, asthma, trauma-related disorders, middle ear infections, and mental illness.
Okay, could I turn you to the statute?
Yes.
As I read your brief, and tell me if I'm wrong, you identify the ambiguity in this phrase, except as otherwise provided, is that correct? This is on page 87 of your addendum.
Yes, we believe that except as otherwise provided in paragraph 16 can refer to the individuals receiving the services described in paragraph 16 or only the services that are described in paragraph 16. We believe that is the ambiguity in the statute.
And where subsection 16 refers to services and individuals.
Yes, but it has to be looked at in context of section 1905A as a whole, which starts off saying medical assistance is for paying the cost of services provided to these individuals
right. For
these services.
Right.
And so you then have an exclusion at the end that says for a certain type of individual and services, and the Departmental Appeals Board has made clear that the exclusion is not only individuals and not only services, it's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. And then we have the exclusion in paragraph 16, and we believe the exclusion, the reference to the exception in paragraph 16 is to individuals receiving those services. And in fact, Your Honor, if you look at the regulation that
okay, so you say it's the individual receiving those services?
Yes.
The services are defined as inpatient psychiatric hospital services.
Correct. So as long as the child is receiving a service that meets the federal standard, as long as the child is receiving a service that meets those standards in paragraph 16, they are no longer excluded from Medicaid. And the way that the federal agency reads it, it says, no, only the service is excluded from Medicaid. But if you look at their regulations, and the regulation we have at in tab 7 at our brief, their regulation is written the way that we read the statute, which says federal financial participation is not available for individuals under 65 who are in an institution for mental diseases, unless they are under age 22 and are receiving inpatient psychiatric services. And that's the way that we read the statute.
Let me just understand your argument here. Is your clients have requested reimbursement for certain costs that, as I understand it, are not inpatient psychiatric services provided at a hospital or one of these other type of institutions, the secretary.
Correct. They're addressing other medically necessary services that are provided to those children.
Right. And so my hypothetical is dental care. All right. So would you agree with me that the plain text of subsection 16 doesn't refer to dental care?
Of section 16?
Yeah.
Yes, I would agree that it doesn't apply to dental care. But all dental right. care is covered elsewhere in the statute.
All right. But then we come to this except clause. And in subsection B, doesn't that exclude the dental services?
I don't think so. And I believe, and this goes back to how that exclusion was originally interpreted. The original exclusion was meant to say that states should remain responsible for the inpatient psychiatric services, that Medicaid was not going to take on that responsibility. Now, it was a debate for many years. Did that mean that it was the services that were excluded, or did that mean that it was the individuals receiving those services who were excluded? And HHS has determined it's the individuals receiving those services
And during that period of time, was HHS reimbursing the states for non-psychiatric medical care?
For children?
Yes.
They were certainly reimbursing in the two states that I represent, reimbursing in many other states as well. In fact, when the Office of the Inspector General
for non-psychiatric,
yes,
care.
for all medically necessary services that were provided to children, because when the OIG went in and did their audit and came up with what the states believe was a new interpretation, that this was limited. That the exception was limited to inpatient psychiatric services. Every state that was audited failed.
Mm-hmm. So the argument is, well, for 30 years, this is my hypothetical here, the agency failed to read the statute. And when it finally looked at it, it discovered, in fact, it had been overpaying these states. Because under this exception in sub B, dental services are simply not covered for children who are in these institutions. Let me finish. And suppose that is correct, just hypothetically. Then do you have any leg to stand on?
Yes, because I think that there continues to be an ambiguity in the statute. And the ambiguity is that you have to look not only at the grammatical construction of how this exclusion is phrased, but you have to look at how it fits with the rest of the statute. So let's look at a couple ways in how it fits with the rest of the statute. Early periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment, which is a very important benefit in Medicaid. It says that every child is entitled to all medically necessary services, whether or not the state has elected to provide them, that this child is entitled to them. That's a benefit that was put in the statute right before the except for paragraph 16 language was put in. So you have a statute that says all children get all medically necessary services except for the sickest children who actually need inpatient psychiatric care. We're not going to give them dental treatment. We're not going to treat their asthma, their middle ear infection, their broken leg, whatever it is. That it doesn't fit well to say that that it should be construed that way in light of the EPSDT benefit.
Well, HHS comes back and says
they say it fits.
Maybe not. But Congress made a decision that it was going to put federal money for children who are in these institutions only insofar as they are getting psychiatric treatment.
Correct. Insofar as they are receiving the type of psychiatric treatment that we think is the minimum that they should be receiving. Not only that treatment, but we won't pay it if you're just warehousing children. If you're just putting children in a psychiatric facility that doesn't meet our high standards, we're not going to match it at all.
This is from my understanding, mm-hmm. but they would get this benefit, that there would be FFP for these other services if they were someplace other than an IMD?
Yes.
Okay.
So for a poor family who has a child that, with a dual diagnosis, who has asthma and mental illness.
You wouldn't put them in an IMD.
You put them in an IMD to get their mental illness covered. You won't get their asthma covered.
Why would you ever put them in an IMD then? Because you put them elsewhere, they'll get both coverage.
Because if their mental illness is such that they need residential psychiatric treatment, okay, then you really don't have another choice for where to put them.
Well, could this be a judgment by Congress that they don't trust IMD to provide benefits beyond psychiatric residential treatment?
Well, if that were the judgment, then the reading of the secretary is completely backwards, because the secretary says, look, you can pay for these services as long as the IMD is providing it, as long as the IMD
is really good at this, at residential psychiatric treatment, but not so good at dental care.
And my understanding of the secretary's reading is if the IMD hired a dentist and put a dentist in the lobby of the IMD, that they would pay for that because that would be provided in and by the IMD. But if you send the child next door to go to a dentist, then they won't. That's my understanding of the secretary's position.
I'm going to ask the
secretary. So I don't think it could reflect that congressional judgment. I'm sorry, Judge Rogers.
No, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. Because something in the red brief raised that question in my mind, that if the IMD entered into a contract with a dentist to come every Monday, then that would be reimbursable care.
That's my understanding of their position.
But if the institutionalized child, what is taken by the facility to a dentist, and the dentist sends that bill to the child or the child's parents, then that is not covered.
That's my understanding of their.
And do the regulations spell this out somewhere?
No, Your Honor. The regulations say what we think the correct interpretation of the statute is, which is FFP is not available unless you're a child receiving these services. So the EPSDT benefit is one way in which the interpretation really does not fit with the rest of the statute. Another way is the comparability provision, which is a bedrock principle of Medicaid.
Before we get to that, in the subsection H, defining what the subsection 16 services are.
Yes.
As I understand it, the Secretary has taken the position that this language means the service has to be provided in and by
yes.
the IMD. Where does the by come from?
I'm not really sure. But again, that subsection H is only a definition of what the inpatient psychiatric service is. It's not a definition of what other services may be available to that child.
Why do you keep saying psychiatric? I mean, why don't you read 16 as psychiatric in 16 as modifying hospital rather than the services? Because if you then look at H, H says inpatient services. It doesn't say psychiatric. In a psychiatric hospital or IMD or whatever, and that's buttressed by the fact that HHS doesn't allow it if it's in one of these PRTFs, which is a non-hospital.
Non-hospital. They have construed the language as extending to non-hospital settings. The services that are at issue here, they're not really other inpatient services. It's pharmacy or dental services or acute hospital services or an outpatient service or a professional service.
So they're not inpatient? Is that the problem? I thought it was that they were not psychiatric.
It's that they're not inpatient psychiatric services defined together, which is a rather elastic definition because the secretary has said it's basically whatever services are provided in and by the IMD, even if they're dental services.
Okay, so if they don't have to be psychiatric, because under 16, psychiatric modifies hospital and not services, you still lose because they're not inpatient?
They're not inpatient or they're not provided by the IMD. For example, if the child needs an appendectomy and has to go to an acute care hospital or has a broken leg and goes to the emergency room, those services are also excluded because they're not provided by the inpatient psychiatric hospital, they're being provided by some other hospital.
If a child has to have an appendectomy, it's never performed in the psychiatric hospital.
I would hope not. Well, no. Well,
I don't know. Right. I'm just asking. They don't perform it.
I don't think so, no.
Okay. Because there's some, you know, there are plenty of hospitals that have psychiatric wings.
Yes, and they actually would not be considered an IMD because the overall character of the hospital is not a psychiatric facility. So if it's a large hospital that has a psychiatric wing and then an acute wing, it probably is not an IMD. It wouldn't fall within that exception.
Why not?
Because the definition of an IMD is that the overall character of the institution is one for the treatment of mental disease.
So it doesn't include a unit or a wing?
Correct.
Okay.
So I did want to touch briefly on one of the other principal ways.
Comparability, yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to go back just so I understand. Is there any question whether there is reimbursement for services related to the treatment that is ordered in connection with the psychiatric treatment? And my hypothetical is the team is actively treating this child in this hospital for psychiatric services, and they prescribe a medication, but they have to perform, as part of their medical obligation, blood tests and lab tests to be certain there are not adverse side effects of the medication. Are the costs of the lab tests and the blood tests reimbursable?
Your Honor, that is a great question, and the Virginia case is a perfect example of how this policy is being applied. Because in the Virginia case before the board, the Commonwealth gave lots of evidence showing that most of the prescriptions which were not being reimbursed were for psychiatric medicine. Most of the professional services that were not being reimbursed had codes, treatment codes, that were for psychiatric services. They were for psychiatrists or for psychologists or for other treatments for the psychiatric illness, or the medication was for psychiatric illness. And they were disallowed because the payment had not been made the state could not prove that the service had been provided in and by the IMD, and in many cases the payment had not been made to the IMD but had been made to the individual practitioner or to the pharmacy. And so, yes, not only would lab and x-ray not be included unless you have a mobile lab that is coming to the IMD to do these blood tests or whatever other may be required, but the prescriptions themselves aren't required unless aren't covered unless somehow they've been folded into the reimbursement that's being made to the IMD, and the professional services aren't covered unless they've been folded somehow into the payment.
So I understand your use of the word folded. My hypothetical is the psychiatric team says the child should take this drug. An outside pharmacy prepares the drug, sends it to the psychiatric hospital, the child takes the drug, and then has to be tested, blood tests, lab tests. The blood tests are performed off-site. The lab tests are performed off-site. None of those costs is reimbursed.
My understanding of the Secretary's position is if the state had constructed a reimbursement rate that would pay the IMD and the IMD would cover those costs out of its own pocket, I think that they might be covered, although because they're provided off-site, I'm not sure.
All right.
But if the state said...
In terms of your clients,
mm-hmm.
Are there any such examples?
Yes, I think the Virginia case was a prime example where not only the lab and x-rays, but the medications themselves and the professional services were not reimbursed, even though they were clearly related to the child's psychiatric treatment. But we couldn't prove that they were provided in and by the IMD.
With respect to the professional services. You're talking about psychiatrists, psychologists.
Yes, therapists.
And they were denied because these people were not
Because the way that, because when Virginia put in its state plan for how it would do a reimbursement, it said we'll pay a facility fee to the PRTF, the Psychiatric Residential Treatment Facility, and then we'll pay for professional fees and prescription drugs separately. And at the time, they were never told, ooh, better not do that because you're not going to get covered for the professional and prescription piece. That's what happened. They then got audited and said, your professional and prescription drugs, you can't show us that they were provided in and by the IMD because the payment was made directly to the professional. It was
by
not.
The professionals, employees of these institutions?
In some cases they may be, and in some cases they may not be. But they are affiliated with them in some way.
So under your understanding of the Secretary's position as to your client from Virginia, what would they have? They'd have to amend their state plan and have these bills, the payments.
Yes, but then I think they find themselves in the situation of my client Kansas, which tried to do something like that, and they were told you can't do it that way either. So it's not only that it's a result that is very hard to square with the rest of the Medicaid statute, but it makes it very difficult for states to construct something that works to try to get the best set of health services to children, because the states have tried different ways, and I think the way that Virginia has tried it and the way that Kansas has tried it, you know, both ended up failing as failing this in and by test. And I don't think it was Congress's intent, and there's certainly no indication that it was Congress's intent, that somehow you were going to need traveling dentists and labs and x-rays to go around and park themselves physically within a psychiatric facility in order for children to get the services that they need. We think it's quite clear that what Congress meant to do was to say, look, as long as you're meeting this high standard of care, then these children can be covered by Medicaid. And they should be treated comparably to every other child in Medicaid.
Can you think of any reason why Congress would distinguish between care for children in IMDs and care for seniors? As I understand it, the way it's interpreted now, it has a more expansive view of FFP for seniors.
Yes, and it's always been that way. Even though the standards of care, of the psychiatric care for seniors is not as high as it is for children. So someone over age 65 who's in an IMD that's considered a nursing home and that's not providing active treatment to cure the mental illness is still covered by Medicaid for all medically necessary services. But children for whom Congress traditionally has said, we got to make sure we treat all their health problems because we're going to have a healthier adult population if we address these problems earlier. That was the point of the EPSDT benefit, was to screen early, diagnose early, and treat early, but not to say, okay, we're going to treat one illness and not your other one. And why for
the only reason I can think of to distinguish that is if Congress had some, again, as I referred to before, was making some judgment about the quality of the care that one could get at an IMD, but that seems undercut by the fact that for seniors, there's no such judgment made.
Right, and in fact, if anything, it cuts the other way, which is to say, we're going to set a higher standard. We're going to set a higher standard for children, and why that would be that you would then only cover that and not for all the other services. It just doesn't make any sense in the larger context of the statute or its overall objective.
Can I ask you one question about 16 again?
Mm-hmm.
So it's your your position that inpatient means, even though it's outpatient with respect to the psychiatric hospital, it's inpatient services, medical services provided inpatient. In other words, a critical care, emergency room, traditional hospital.
Well, we're not really quarreling with the Secretary's definition of what an inpatient service is. We're saying the standard for getting accepted from the IMD exclusion is, are you receiving those services? Are you receiving inpatient services the way that has been defined? And if you are, then you, the individual, are out of this exclusion, not just that service. Now, the Secretary has taken a different tact, which is to say it's only the service that's exempted, but we'll be willing to push a little on what does inpatient service mean. That is, we'll be willing to say we'll count dentists as an inpatient service as long as you're providing it in the facility. We'll count that as an inpatient service. So the Secretary's coming at it as a different way, which is sort of expanding the inpatient service. But that doesn't really, that's not always the best way to, that's not a good way to approach this issue.
In other words, in one of these IMDs, if you had an emergency room or a critical care unit or something, then HHS would say inpatient services covered even though they're not psychiatric.
That's my understanding. Or if you had an operating room and someone got their...
We're not real good at fixing drafting mistakes. I mean, your theory is that this is some kind of drafting error, right? That they wrote down words. I mean, let's imagine that I don't agree with you that it's ambiguous. Okay, so... speak with me in those.
I don't want to imagine that.
Okay. speak with me on that terrain, okay? Hypothetically, that if I don't agree with your argument that it's ambiguous, that in fact it's pretty clear what a wooden application or a direct application of this statute would lead to, then what you're saying is, well, that's not what Congress intended. And you're asking us then to correct a drafting error. We're not real good at doing that. At least this judge is very reluctant to do that.
So, and I don't think I'm asking you to do that. I'm not.
I was going to ask what efforts are being made to get Congress to do that. Well, if in fact that you're right that Congress intended something much different than what we have. Now you have this letter from Chairman Waxman. What else is going on?
Not much is happening in the Medicaid area right now. And it's difficult to get things changed in Medicaid. And Medicaid is about to get much bigger if the Affordable Care Act goes forward in 2014.
We may be looking at our future.
So I don't think I'm asking for the court to rewrite the statute. I'm saying if you look at the rest of the statute, you have to see the ambiguity that's in the language. You might not see it if you just pull the language out and say, I'm only looking at
this. So if I disagree with you on that, then you have nothing left for me?
Okay, then you can rewrite the statute.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Dana Karaswong for the United States. Before 1972, everyone under age 65 in an institution for mental diseases was ineligible for Medicaid. In 1972, Congress determined that they would provide a limited set of services for people under 21 in these institutions. People aged 22 to 64 remain completely ineligible. They lose their services when they go.
Is it true that prior to the audits, CMS was in fact participating in FFP in these services?
CMS has never knowingly paid for these services.
Strike the knowingly just for a second, but they were paying for them for 29 years.
So the way the system works,
For 29 years?
I don't know what was happening before 1997, which is when these audits started. But the way the system works is that the states bill the accounts.
Why don't you know that? Is that a difficult question?
Because the way this works is that the states bill the account, the federal government, and that money comes out automatically without federal review unless there's an audit, which is the process where
For 29 years, the position of the government is for 29 years, whatever it is, 30 years, 29 years, the government wasn't looking at this statute?
That's right. There's limited
That's
money.
Right?
There's
so 29 years, the government is paying out these large sums of money without looking at the statute that tells them what to do? Is that your position?
Well, they were certainly looking at the statute. They weren't auditing the states on this issue. The way they determine what issues to audit is by looking for things where they think there might be
what
a problem.
The and audit? They Why after 30 years did they finally audit this?
Well, they thought there might be a problem here, and it turned out that there was. So they did the audit, and they asked for the money back. This is the way that the Medicaid statute works. It would be phenomenally expensive for the federal government to look at.
So you can go 30 years paying out a type of benefit before it's ever audited.
Yes, it would be nice if there were more money for audits, Your Honor. But just to be clear, this shouldn't be a surprise that this is the rule, because it's very apparent from the text of the statute. Right? The text of the statute says that medical assistance does not include any payments with respect to care or services for any individual who has not attained 65 years of age and is in an institution for medical
assistance. What sense does it make to allow such payments for seniors but not for children? What's the judgment that Congress is making there?
Well, looking at this in its historical context, Your Honor, in 1965, of course, there was nothing when they created this act. There was nothing for children in institutions for mental diseases at all. 1965 was the same time Congress created Medicare. It was taking on a lot of responsibility for payments for seniors. Now, in 1972, when they expand this limited benefit to children, what they were talking about was incentivizing this active inpatient psychiatric hospital care, and they said, okay, we're going to pay for that. We're not going to pay for anything else, because traditionally that has been the responsibility of the states, and we want it to remain the responsibility of the states. We want to use our federal funding.
I understand all that history. I think we all do. It's in the briefs and we've read it. But what I don't understand is what would be the purpose for Congress distinguishing between the type of care that's being received by seniors in an IMD and the type of care that's being received by children in an IMD?
Well, Congress is treating different age groups differently, right? Adults under 65 aren't getting anything at all. So Congress has decided in 1965 to create this broader benefit for seniors. In 1972,
Congress is deciding that both seniors and children will get the benefit of there'll be FFP for psychiatric residential treatment, right?
That's right, Your Honor.
And but then Congress is going a step beyond that and saying, and for seniors, we'll get FFP for non-psychiatric, right?
That's right. And
but not point, for children.
And so
that's what I want to understand. Why that distinction?
Well, our starting point is the language of the statute, and that's clearly laid out in the statute where it says.
And I'm trying to understand why Congress would do that.
Congress can treat different age groups differently. And when Congress did this initially for people over 65, it was at the same time as it created Medicare. It was taking on responsibility, broad responsibility, for people over 65. That's not what happened in 1972, where Congress wanted to target the federal funds to incentivize the particular care they wanted to provide. I'd like to also...
Can I go back to the other argument? It's not quite a comparability argument, but maybe. And I'll get the initials wrong, but the early screening provisions that require these services to be provided, which are identified as necessary, if that requires the payment for my hypothetical dental care or the emergency operation, why shouldn't the court read this Section 16 exclusion or exception consistent with that provision, that Congress could not have intended to pay for children who were at home with their families, whereas they would not pay for children who were institutionalized?
Well, if we take a step back, Your Honor, and look at the entire definition of medical assistance, that screening service is part of the definition of medical assistance. It's one of the services on that list. It is not the service in paragraph 16.
No, but what I'm getting at is Judge Griffith was asking, you know, why would Congress distinguish between seniors and children? Now, my question is, why would they distinguish? What's the rationale for distinguishing between those children subject to this early screening and the children who are in these psychiatric hospitals?
Care for children in psychiatric hospitals, like all people in psychiatric hospitals, as it remains certainly unquestionably for adults, was the responsibility of the states. So when the federal government came in, they wanted to target their federal money to incentivize a particular service, but
here's my point. I'm just trying to understand this, that I'm the state of Virginia, and I have children who are in this early screening program. And part of what I have to do is to provide them with psychiatric service, psychiatric treatment. All right. Then in 1972, this exception comes along. Have I got it backward?
I'm not sure. Maybe finish your question and then.
You told me that the early screening program was enacted by Congress before.
That's right.
The exception in 16.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we read 16 as taking away what Congress had just given children under the early screening program?
Your Honor, I think you do have it backwards. When there was the early screening program was enacted in 67, these children in institutions for mental diseases didn't get anything. They didn't get that early screening. They didn't get any Medicaid services.
No, I understand, but they got federal reimbursement for dental care, for the appendectomy. That's what I'm getting at.
Not if they were in institutions for mental diseases. When
I
they
agree.
Were in those
institutions. Okay. Okay. So if Congress comes along and says, well, now we're going to participate somewhat in the institutionalized class of children, necessarily that means that Congress is pulling back what it provides for children who are not in these institutions. In other words, part of what I'm getting at is back in the 60s and before that, there were a lot of state mental hospitals that were warehousing people, and there really weren't places for children to go. And then the whole theory of psychiatric treatment changed, and people were supposed to be integrated into the community, et cetera, et cetera. St. Elizabeth's is a perfect example, all right? So you were only going to keep certain types of people in mental hospitals, and you were going to have others out in the community in these community psychiatric centers. And I gather from this language in H that the secretary has the authority to identify other inpatient settings that the secretary specified in regulation. So these are not all just what I call these old school mental hospitals. So in the old school mental hospitals, the hypothetical is they had a lot of staff, they had a lot of patients, et cetera. Now we have some of these community facilities where they don't have all that. And yet somehow these children are to be treated differently for purposes of federal reimbursement. And that's what I'm trying to understand.
Children who are in institutions for mental diseases, whether it's an old school institution or a new institution, are included in this language in the statute in
so when
you know, all care and services.
So when the early screening program, it applies to all children. It meant all children except those who are in IMDs.
Well, the early screening program is, of course, a different item on that list. The provision regarding what children get for early screening, that is a reference back to the early screening provision that is on that list of inpatient care and on that list of medical assistance services, and it is not the item on paragraph 16. I would like to clarify the scope of what the federal government pays for under paragraph 16, because that came up in plaintiff's argument, although it is not relevant to the issue on appeal here, which is simply this language. But the federal government pays for care if it is inpatient psychiatric hospital services as required by the statute, which means it's inpatient, and it is in the child's treatment plan. That treatment plan is set out both in 13960H and also in the regulation in 42 CFR 441.155.
The council was explaining what happened to Virginia and in the Kansas situation. It's a problem of where the bills are sent?
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. This is not a situation where the states should hide these payments that are not for inpatient psychiatric hospital services by wrapping them up in the per diem and therefore get paid for them. That seems to be Kansas and Virginia's argument. The way that you would get paid for services would only be if they were inpatient psychiatric hospital services and they were in the child's treatment plan. That was the situation in Texas, where the state came back and said, no, actually, some of these payments were for inpatient psychiatric hospital services in the treatment plan, and Texas provided the documentation to show that. Now, Virginia hasn't done that. They are not raising on appeal that there are any particular care or services that should have been classified as inpatient psychiatric hospital services. Neither has Kansas, right? Their argument is instead that they don't have to show that something qualifies as inpatient psychiatric hospital services because the federal government pays for everything on that list, notwithstanding.
So in my hypothetical about the treatment plan that includes the administration of a medication that because it's so strong, you need to have these periodic blood tests and lab tests to be sure it's not having adverse side effects, those costs would be federally reimbursable?
The costs would be federally reimbursable if the treatment was provided inpatient and in the plan. If in your hypothetical, it is in the plan. Now, whether when they're sending...
That's what I'm talking about, the blood tests and the lab tests that are done off-site.
Now, whether when they send that blood off-site, it ceases to be an inpatient service, I don't think HHS has addressed that. I don't think it was an issue in Texas. But the question there would be, what does it mean to be inpatient, right? It wouldn't be whether the federal government should be providing all of these services, notwithstanding the fact that they aren't inpatient services.
Can I ask you, why did you add... and part of a treatment plan? I mean, what were you trying to capture there that wasn't in 16 if you're right that it's got to be inpatient and it's got to be psychiatric?
So 16 refers to subsection H, and subsection H describes this treatment plan, the details of which are fleshed out in the regulations. And so...
So it's not an additional requirement.
Right, it's what it means to be an inpatient psychiatric hospital service. We need to have these kids are assessed when they come in, a plan is created on how they're going to be treated, and their services should be consistent with that plan.
I mean, is there some cost incurred that's not part of a treatment plan? I just don't understand what that adds, the treatment plan.
Well,
I mean, what would be submitted that you would say, well, this is an inpatient psychiatric hospital service, but not part of a treatment plan?
I can't think of any such example. I think where the treatment plan might come in would be in a hypothetical where something seems pretty borderline, but it's in the treatment plan and the doctors have made the case that this really is part of the psychiatric service provided to that child. I see that I'm out of time.
Can I ask you just about dialysis? And I think my understanding is correct that dialysis is provided under Medicare, regardless of your age, as in end-stage renal disease. Is that also provided to these children in IMDs?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I have no idea.
Okay.
My understanding goes as far as yours, that Medicare covers it. I assume that that would be the case, that it would be provided under Medicare, but I just don't know the answer.
In your brief at page 24, do you have that handy?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
In paragraph numbered 4,
mm-hmm.
Did you mean to imply there that if an IMD has a contract with a dentist to provide dental care for children at an IMD, that those services would be, come within Medicaid for federal reimbursement purposes?
Well, that's a question that goes to Judge Henderson's question. So that seems to me to be something that is borderline. If the treating physicians had made the case that this dental service is in some way part of the inpatient psychiatric hospital service and it is provided inpatient, then I think that...
Well, what your sentence says, quote, mm-hmm. as you can read, it says, quote, and I'm only reading part of it, that it was provided by the Institution for Mental Diseases or pursuant to a contract with the institution. So I read that, and I put a question in the margin. Does that mean it doesn't have to be in and by, so long as it's a contract?
So it certainly has to be in, because that is in the statute. And when we talk about what it means to be by, hospitals have very complex contractual relationships with their staff physicians. And all I was trying to say there is that physicians who are on staff, who have a contract that meets HHS's requirements of by, which of course are not at issue in this case, would possibly qualify as inpatient psychiatric hospital services.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, I would ask the court to affirm.
All right. Thank you. Does Ms. Brown have any time? All right, why don't you take a couple minutes?
I'd just like to address the government's contention that Congress intended to target federal dollars towards a limited benefit for children, because there's no evidence of that in the legislative history, that Congress was saying, let's only give these children one benefit. And the best place to see that...
In the legislative history, what about the text of the...
Okay, so if, let's say the text of the statute, the best place to look for that is in the text of the statute that specifically identifies the individuals in Medicaid who are entitled to only a limited benefit. So there are certain pregnant women at an income level, they're only entitled to pregnancy covered services, and the statute says you only get pregnancy services.
Section G,
yes, related to pregnancy.
HHS comes back, as I recall, and says, well, we don't have to put everything in.
But they do put everything in subsection G.
Well, they
put in everything except for this.
Okay. And so what is wrong with that?
Because there is it is an indication that Congress could not have meant what the Secretary says they mean here, because every population...
You were about to say Congress could not have meant what they said.
Right. No. Congress could not have meant what the Secretary says that they...
But there's nothing in our canons of statutory construction or anything that would prevent them from doing just that, right? Listing everything in G and then somewhere else just making it clear that the same rule applies here.
That is possible, but you're talking about one of the most complex statutes in the U.S. Code, and the courts have consistently recognized that this statute is almost impenetrable. And Congress does, I think, try to do their part by specifying when...
Congress created the mess.
When populations are only going to get a limited benefit. Even when it's perfectly clear in one place, they then repeat it in G. They then repeat in G, you only get a limited benefit. And that was never that has never been the case for children. Thank you very much.